Sure, all around canine training and Country Pet Inn. You love it when a dog surprises you in a training, and that happened recently when you were training a service dog for someone with MS.
Yeah, a challenge. So I watched the dog and the owner work together and just stayed out of it. What I saw was amazing. Goosebumps getting just thinking about it. She was adopting behavior that would make them more productive, something I didn't teach her. She just offset things that I taught her to what she felt were necessary to accomplish whatever tasks they were performing. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so even for as many years as you've been doing this, you can still get surprised.
Oh, I know, and that's one of the things about dog training that I love. It's magical. Two beings that don't look anything alike, and they're forming this union. It's the best feeling. It really is. It's hard to describe, but people in their lives with their dogs in different capacities have probably seen little bits and pieces of this as well, and I just get to see it, I think, more often.
Learn more at countrypetinn.com.
Back to school can mean back to sniffles, coughs, and other illnesses. Whether you or your family are navigating cold and flu season or seeking care for a sports injury, our team at Same Day Health and Imaging is here to care for you. Same Day Health and Imaging, located between Walmart and WyoVision, is open 7 days a week, offering walk-in services for illnesses, injuries, lab draws, x-rays, mammography, and more. Look for the white flags at 1470 Sugarland Drive. Our team looks forward to providing you with excellent patient-centered care. Walk-ins are welcome, or you can schedule an appointment at SheridanSameDay.com.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Wednesday, October 1st. And from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. October is officially National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This is a national effort to raise awareness, support victims, and honor survivors of domestic abuse. This morning, I am joined by Sheridan Police Department Captain Tom Ringley. Good morning, sir. Welcome back.
Good morning, Floyd. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's start broadly, sir. How much of an issue is domestic violence here in Sheridan? And how does it compare to national trends?
Well, it's an absolute issue even for if there's only one victim of domestic violence. And that's what we really focus on. We want to mitigate all crimes to zero, but this is of the utmost importance, obviously, because it's so serious and the potential for, an increase is always there. The domestic violence cycle never, from what we've observed, never lessens. It gets more and more severe, which is why we're so concerned about it. Over the past 5 years, the Sheridan Police Department has responded to an average of 97 calls each year involving intimate partners. In 2024, there were 101 incidents. So we're roughly about average, although we definitely want to see those numbers go down. And during those same 5 years, we've averaged 44 domestic violence arrests, and these are for offenses such as battery, aggravated assault, and strangulation. In 2024, we had a slight increase with 49 arrests.
Now, you mentioned intimate partner violence specifically. Can you explain why those are tracked so closely by the SPD?
Not only are they tracked closely by us, but they also have their own category of crimes. Domestic violence is.
Oh, really?
And it's because passion's involved and people make bad decisions when they commit any crime, but when that passion is involved, people are not thinking clearly. And that can lead to an acceleration of the level of violence.
An overflowing of emotion.
Yes.
That just takes control over
rational thought. It's kind of the term crime of passion.
Yeah.
And it's not always like that. Some of the offenders are just bad people that are controlling.
Yeah, and that's what they're after is the control.
But yes,
there is that element of the passion.
Yes.
Now, looking at those numbers, about 97 calls a year, 101 incidents last year. How do those actually shape the department's approach? When we look at the average, we look at the year. I know it ebbs and flows based on circumstances, sometimes outside events. How do you get your team together and kind of formulate a strategy?
Yeah, it's difficult. We can't perform high visibility enforcement like we do in traffic, where we know where all the driving violations and crashes take place, and we can station officers appropriately in those areas to prevent through presence. We have a vibrant education program in Sheridan County with the Accident Resource Center leading the charge on that. What we do is we try to intervene as soon as possible. If we go to a domestic dispute, which is just an argument and not a crime, we will offer to provide a list of resources that people can take advantage of to work on the relationship or figure out that maybe this isn't the relationship for them. Mm. But we can, for lack of a better term, nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
And if we have an arrest, then a detective will generally meet with the offender in jail the next day. And once again, explain how these crimes can accelerate in the level of violence, and once again, offer resources.
It's got to be a really complicated situation to sit in and have a discussion with, because there's always the relationship involved.
Yes. And we can't solve relationship problems.
Yeah.
We solve very few problems that can't be solved through our presence. All we can do is, you know, there are professionals such as the African Resource Center that can help victims. And there are psychiatric professionals that can speak to anyone involved. So we can't force people to do that. And we can't offer that expert advice. But what we can do is let people know that those resources are available. However, it's up to them to take that step.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know it's got to be extremely frustrating for some law enforcement officers to go to the same residence over and over, feel like you're a record skipping over and over, saying the same thing.
Not really. Like with most cycles, say for example, addiction cycles, it's cyclical, but also if someone accepts help for an addiction, it doesn't always take the first time. Sometimes it takes multiple times. And I'm not saying domestic violence victims are addicted to anything. They are victims.
Yeah.
But maybe it takes us more than one visit to get our foot in the door and offer the same resources and let them know that they're heard and that they are in charge when we're there. And we will respond generally how the victim wants us to, with the caveat that a domestic violence offense is a mandated custodial arrest by statute. But it like trying to solve any problem, it can take more than one attempt.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, with addictions, it's something you're not even expected to hit it on the first time.
Yeah. Maybe a better term would be a cycle of behavior.
Okay.
It can take more than one talk to change a cycle of behavior. And often the victims don't know. It's what they know.
Yeah.
And they don't know that it's okay, because often they're isolated and controlled by the abuser.
Yeah. And they might not even see a way out.
Yes.
I imagine even with the officers there are victims that are scared to talk even with you in the room.
Yes. Yep.
And that's got to be a hell.
Yeah. And that's where the advocates do such a great job, because they're not in uniform, they're not officers, and they are subject matter experts. They've seen it all, and they have some wonderful training. So once again, that's us trying to get resources.
Yeah.
To the people, to the right resources.
Kind of going off on a side tangent here. Have there been situations where an advocate arrives on scene or goes in with you, or is that something that you have to allow to take place by itself?
Generally, the earliest an advocate will be introduced is during the interview of the victim. Ideally, if it's not a cold call, if it's not something that happened historically.
Okay.
But I've always found it best that the advocate will be in the interview, that they're not answering questions. Sometimes, ideally, they're sitting behind the victim to where, so they can't have any accidental undue influence.
Okay.
Because, you know, body language is a thing.
Absolutely.
But they're there for the victim, so that the victim knows that that they're being fully supported. And we offer all victims a referral form for the Absent Resource Center.
Now, over the past 5 years, you said 44 domestic violence arrests annually. We had 49 in 2024. What does that tell you about enforcement and trends here in Sheridan itself?
That they're generally consistent.
Mm-hmm.
We do track how often we have to revisit a residence, and how often we revisit after we visited with the offender. And those numbers get pretty deep and involved. But unfortunately, we do often make multiple visits to the same relationship.
Yeah. You're a very professional guy.
Oh, thank you.
Very by the book. But have you ever been out and seen one of these victims and just kind of conversationally said, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of, you're talking about right after we responded, seeing them out.
Maybe even a while later.
If I see them out and about, of course we do. We care about these people, these victims. And once again, it's letting them know this is often the first time in a long time that the victims feel like they have control. And we make it clear to them at the time of the call that you're in control, but here's how we can help you. And we need their cooperation to prosecute an offender. I mean, not always. I mean, obviously if there's physical evidence then, but at the time of the call, our concern is helping them and making them safe in the short term.
From your perspective, what are some of the biggest misconceptions that the public has about domestic violence?
I think the biggest one is that it's confined to the a lower economic class, when in fact it spans the entire spectrum of society.
Yeah.
Regardless of education, or finances, or perceived standing in the community, it cuts a swath through the whole hierarchy that we have.
Really? Yeah. And it doesn't matter where you come from or where you live. You've seen it in every situation.
That's correct.
Now, these crimes often happen behind closed doors. What are some signs that friends or family could be looking out for if they think maybe a family member or a loved one?
Oftentimes, it's, from what I've observed, it's just if a person, and I'm being very careful not to say woman, because it does, there are some male victims too, so I will just use the term victim, that the victim is being controlled. Maybe they're not allowed to drive. Maybe they don't have access to finances. Maybe they're not allowed to speak. Maybe they look at the offending partner before they talk.
Like for an approval.
Yes, or permission. And it's this little things like that. Obviously, there's physical evidence too. The black eye and excuse, or any other injury, and excuse that doesn't sound plausible. I fell down, I walked in their door. Even worse is, yeah, I deserved it.
Who?
That's very concerning. But it's with me, I'm fairly intuitive. And if I've found if I think there's something wrong over the years, then there probably is, and that needs to be investigated.
Almost like a feeling that you get when you're there.
Yes, it's a vibe, and then we're people, and we can sense each other's emotions and body language.
Yeah, yeah, especially when that's what you're looking out for, number one.
Yes.
And number two, you've been trained to pick up on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, if someone feels unsafe right now, Captain, what immediate steps do you feel that they should take, both legally and for their own protection?
Well, I won't give legal advice because I'm not an attorney, but for their own protection is get out and call somebody. They can call the Sheridan Police Department. They can call the Abstinence Resource Center. They can call if they have a mental health professional or a member of the clergy, anyone that they feel comfortable talking to. And also some that maybe can help guide them through the process. Once again, that's the, and I hope I'm not stealing their thunder because I'm sure they're going to come on later in the month, but the Abstinence Resource Center not only be there in the moment, but they can guide people through the legal process.
They can tell them what's
next.
Yes,
they're in court. They're at the hearings. They can help with the protection orders.
And they really step up.
They do. They're very passionate.
They know their job. They know what they're there to do, and they've helped so many individuals over the years. And we will actually have them on the show next week. They're going to get a full show next Thursday. And we will go over all of this stuff again because it is so important. On that, I do have to take a commercial break. We're going to have more with our Sheridan Police Department when we return. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Hub on Smith.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
So I was recently informed and corrected that a semicolon is not the small intestine. And the same goes for you tuning up or fixing your own 4x4 side-by-side to get it ready for hunting, firewooding, or snow plowing. Because trying that yourself is like doing your own aspidectomy. Messy, painful, and not something you walk away bragging about. That's why you need the specialist at Hando Service Center. So skip the home remedies, get your rig in for a full checkup at Hando's on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
People say, let's just get rid of livestock and grow crops instead. That's not possible.
We're really missing the bigger picture.
In a world without cows, we may be giving up one of our best tools to help heal the planet.
If we want to truly mitigate climate change, we need animals on the landscape.
How do we pull that carbon out of the atmosphere and put it back into the soil? That's where livestock come in.
Agriculture holds the key to saving our planet.
What really happens if you take all the cows away?
Are we better off in a world without cows?
A World Without Cows, Friday night's feature film at the 8th Annual Wild Film Fest in Sheridan, October 2nd through October 5th. See the full lineup and get your tickets now at wildfilmfest.org.
You ought to know, this is your chance to win a trip for two to Las Vegas to see Alanis Morissette live. Century 21 BHJ Realty and Latitude Travel will fly you from Billings, treat you to three nights at the Cromwell Hotel, and send you to the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace for an unforgettable night of music with Alanis Morissette on October 24th. So, what did you learn here today? You need to enter today and every day on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com. Winner chosen October 6th.
The following message is presented by Century21BHJ.com.
Dreaming of homeownership? Habitat for Humanity's homeowner application cycle is open October 1st through October 31st. This round of applications is specifically for a home in Ranchester, Wyoming. So if you're looking for an affordable path to homeownership and want to live in Ranchester, this opportunity could be for you. Visit SheridanHabitat.org or call 307-672-3848 to learn more and apply. Don't wait. The deadline is October 31st. Habitat for Humanity is an equal housing opportunity lender.
See. Mm-hmm. I would go without a camera.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. Sheridan Police handled more than 100 domestic violence incidents last year, making nearly 50 arrests. And officers say strangulation remains one of the most common but hardest to spot offenses. And these numbers reflect only the cases that reach the SPD, folks. Many others go unreported. Captain Tom Ringley is here to explain how the SPD responds and what resources are available. Captain, could you walk us through the difference between battery and aggravated assault here in the Cowboy State?
Sure. If I could touch back on the strangulation real quick, we're quite adept at spotting it. It's and strangulation is when one puts your usually hands around someone else's neck or throat to where they can't breathe. And but that's relative, for lack of a better term, easy to spot. There will be handprints around the neck and also something called petechiae in the eyes, where blood the pressure causes blood vessels in the eyes to burst, and you can see it.
So it's almost like they got bloodshot eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's not that difficult to spot, and pair that with good interview techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And also what we hear on the 911 calls and the whole combination. So we don't miss a lot of.
So even if the victim decides I'm going to go throw on a turtleneck.
Yeah.
We're just going to get the cops out of here as fast as we can.
Yeah.
There's other techniques.
And that rarely happens because the victim has usually called us.
Mm-hmm.
And they make, the statements they make the dispatch is usually exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite rare for victims to change their versions of events. They may, due to the stress, remember different things, or some memories may come back to them and they may lose some memories. But generally, strangulation is it's very important, because if one step, it's a step below a homicide. That's why the state roughly 20 years ago created a separate strangulation statute, just because it is so severe.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can die, you may probably won't die from a black eye, but you can die from strangulation.
Yeah.
That it can kill you.
And as you said, in those moments, passion can take over.
Yeah.
And an individual could be doing more than what they think they're doing.
Yeah. And it's not just breathing. It's also the normal circulation of blood that's been impeded through applying pressure to the throat or neck. And it's got to be of a household member too.
Hmm.
And then what's the difference between domestic battery and aggravated assault is domestic battery is if one knowingly or recklessly causes bodily injury to another household member by use of physical force. And remember, a household member is, we always think of a spouse or an intimate partner. But for domestic purposes, it's a family member. It can be a parent. It can be an adult child. And it can be anyone that you've been in a dating relationship with. Aggravated assault and battery is if someone causes or attempts to cause serious bodily injury to another that displays an extreme indifference to life. Like if I shot somebody,
mm-hmm.
If it's not attempted murder, then it's definitely aggravated assault, or threatening anyone too. If I threaten you with a weapon, that's aggravated.
Really?
Assault. Yeah. Those are the three main categories. And then a lesser one, like a push, is unlawful contact if there's no bodily injury.
So just a shove.
Yeah.
Now, does the manner of weapon matter? A gun as opposed to a knife?
No, it's as long as, or a baseball bat, or mm-hmm. it has to be something capable of causing injury. I mean, a cup, if I throw a cup and hit you in the face, that can hit, if I fracture an eye socket with a cup, then that's serious bodily injury. So it's a better term might be an instrument.
Mm. As opposed to weapon.
Yeah.
Now, once officers have evidence of a violent crime, what's the standard procedure?
If we've developed probable cause, it's the same standard for any arrest, and the suspect is still there, and then we will arrest him. But like I said, it's mandated by statute that we arrest. Sometimes the suspect has fled the scene. And we can still make a custodial arrest without a warrant if we locate the suspect within 24 hours. If we can't find a suspect, then we will send the investigation through the county attorney's office and apply for an arrest warrant. Although if we have reason to believe that the suspect intends to go back and harm the victim or anyone else, then we can still we will still arrest him between in that time after 24 hours and before the warrant is issued. But the prosecutors and the courts are fantastic in getting the warrants issued as soon as possible.
They understand the danger involved here.
Yeah, they understand almost probably more than we do because they live in those prosecutions. You know, it may take us 5 hours tops to complete a domestic violence investigation, but the other agencies live for weeks and months and some with the prosecution and helping the victim.
Yeah, and they're constantly doing the interviews and then another interview on top of it, another interview.
Yeah. Well, we generally do all the interviews, but they definitely serve the victims very well.
Yeah. Now, you noted the 24-hour arrest window for domestic violence. Why did legislature carve out that exception?
Because of the severity of the crime. Once again, it's not a crime of chance to where if I see someone and walking down the street and I assault them and keep going, they can't find me, I'm probably not going to go back. But once again, let's go back to talking about control and passion. We all know how hard it is to leave things alone if we're deeply involved with something. And it's just like a relationship. It's to stop the person from going back while the heat's still the heat's still up, while they're still not thinking clearly.
Like even just a regular marital fight, you know, ooh, I thought of something, now I got to go back in there and say something again. But this is something completely different. Now it's like, I got to go finish the job that I started.
Yeah, so I'm going to go contact her again and talk him or her out of pressing charges, and then the argument, then everything starts all over. So it's, in my opinion, it's to give a cooling off period.
Mm. Now, when an arrest is made, how does the SPD work with those prosecutors and victims' advocates to make sure cases still move forward, even if the victim is unable or, as you said, sometimes unwilling?
Well, we make sure that we serve the prosecutors and provide them all the information they need. They may have follow-up questions. They may need more information, such as hospital records or any other medical records. You know, the county attorney Bennett, you know, summed it up to me once a long time ago. It's like they have to be, for them to prosecute and stand up there before a judge, they have to be morally, they have to be sure they have all the information. And that's the conversation in a nutshell. I might have missed some points. And it's our job to provide them that information. And it's this follow up, you know, we take, initial pictures of injuries, we take 24-hour pictures and 36 because we know bruises develop. So there is some follow up after the arrest.
So even 36 hours after the incident itself, you will be back. I need to take some photos again. Yep. And that's got to be a very tough thing to do.
It's not, because we're serving the victim. It may not be pleasant. And we hate that anyone's suffering, but you know, our officers and detectives are very focused, and we know that the goal is to help the victim.
So you can push all that aside and just get the job done.
Yeah, we're able to stay fairly objective about everything, which is why we generally always have openings, because we're hiring the right people that can not take things personally. Mm-hmm. and not get angry. We may get angry after the fact, but we remain professional during the course of an investigation.
Because you're human too.
Yes.
And this has got to eat at you at least a little bit.
It makes me angry after the fact, but it's not my prerogative to take that out on anyone, to include a suspect. The way we get satisfaction is by doing good investigations and giving the prosecutors all the information they need.
Yeah.
But it's not personal.
Yeah. And knowing that individual is going to be either put away or removed yeah. from the victim.
Yep.
Therein is the satisfaction, knowing that that person is safe.
Yes.
What challenges do you think remain in breaking the cycle of domestic violence? And this is the $1 million question. I guess, you know, if you could answer this, you'd be rich.
If I'd answered that, we would have solved it by now. I think all the resources are in place. But we cannot you can lead a horse to water.
Yeah.
But we cannot force people to get help. But we have to keep letting the victims know that it's not their fault. I think if the number one thing is, this is not the victim's fault. They've done absolutely nothing to deserve any abuse. They are victims not only of the abuse in the moment, but also of a pattern of abuse. And let's not forget the mental side of things. There's mental abuse, to where they're often being told that they don't have any worth and that they wouldn't be able to get along without the abuser. And it's this classic abuse cycle. But it is okay to ask for help, and nobody deserves to live the kind of life to where they're constantly worried about being injured.
Yeah, like a conditional fear. Yes. I want you on those eggshells all the time.
Yeah.
A conditional abuse, just over and over again. You beat them down so you can control them. It's just something that I absolutely dislike and disgusted by, and we see it all the time, unfortunately. And one more time, sir, if you feel, or you, if someone is listening right now and they feel trapped in this type of abusive situation, what would you tell them?
Reach out to somebody. You can reach out to the police department. You can reach out to the sheriff's office, the Advocacy Resource Center, a trusted friend, a member of the clergy. The first step is telling somebody. Because it's the first step to any problem is admitting there's a problem. And by telling someone, then you, in my opinion, you're kind of crossing a line to where you've recognized the problem.
You're saying it out loud.
Yeah. You're saying it out loud. And, that's the first step in getting help, is just telling somebody.
Captain, I want to thank you so much for coming in, speaking with me about this. This is a tough issue.
It is. And it's one of our highest, it is of the highest priority to us. There's no priority higher than preventing domestic violence.
All right. When we return, we're going to speak with Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Share.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Hub on Smith.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Tired of paying rent to your landlord every month? At 751 Avoca, you have the chance to own and customize 4,000 square feet of flexible office space. With four separate entrances, you can even lease out part of the building and become the landlord yourself. This property is ADA compliant with high-tech systems. There's ample off-street parking and room to expand just one block off Coffeen. It's the perfect location for medical, dental, therapy, or professional offices. Call Amity Allman with 307 Real Estate at 307-683-6673 or on the web at amityallmanhomes.com.
Legends say the opal holds lightning trapped within its heart, a stone of mystery once feared but long cherished for its beauty and magic. This October, celebrate your own legend with glowing fire opals or shimmering white opals in timeless designs crafted to enchant. Dare to wear the magic of opal from Legacy Diamond and Gems, 11 North Main in downtown Sheridan, or online at legacydiamondgems.com. Legacy Diamond and Gems, where every piece tells a story.
This is Tim Kerr, General Manager at Frackleton's. Downtown is about to taste like autumn. Our new fall menu is coming soon, crafted with the rich, hearty flavors of the season. And while you wait, you don't have to. Our new cocktail menu is already here, with fresh creations and bold twists waiting to be poured. Come in, unwind, and taste what Wyoming autumn feels like. Only at Frackleton's, where every season tastes like a celebration. Frackleton's, Main Street, Downtown Sheridan.
ERA Carroll Realty, Wyoming Corporate Office, and First Federal Bank and Trust ask you to help them fill the bus with food for the food group and the 700 school children assisted with weekend meals. It's as easy as finding the food group bus this Saturday in the Ridley's parking lot from 10 to 2 and donating a food item from the food list found at SheridanMedia.com. Cash donations are also welcome. Come on, Sheridan, help fill the bus for the food group, making a difference one kid at a time.
This public service announcement brought to you by Atlas Chiropractic. Your healing begins when you pick up the phone.
Sheridan County Sportsman's Association is hosting an NRA basic pistol class. This class covers safety, handling, actions, cleaning, and maintenance, and shooting fundamentals. A prerequisite for concealed carry permit.
Saturday, October 4th.
Guns and ammo will be provided, or bring your own. Register online at NRA Courses website
or call Sheila at 307-752-5331.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, I am joined by the Johnson County Commission Chair, Mr. Bill Novotny. Good morning, sir. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, good morning, Floyd. It is great to be with you this morning.
It's been a while since you and I got to talk. How was the closeout of summer over there in Johnson County?
You know, Floyd, we had a fantastic summer over here in Johnson County. Number one, we were pretty fortunate, no major wildfires. Our traveling public has been so gracious with the Main Street project and how that's disrupted ability to get around town. But the tourists were out in full force, which is great, helps support our local economy. We had an incredible county fair. Wonderful Saturdays in the squares and featured live music. So we really couldn't ask for a better one. And the best part is Crazy Woman Canyon is now open just in time so folks can go enjoy those fall colors.
I think that's amazing. We'll talk about that here in just a bit, but I really look forward to that. Me and the wife might make a trip this weekend, actually. It's been a while since I've been up there, and what a beautiful area.
It truly is. We're blessed where we live.
All right. Chairman, let's start with the House Draw Fire Cheatgrass Project. This is something that I've spoken with a few different individuals on regarding the Elk Fire, the House Draw, Remington. A lot of burn scars out there, a lot of work being done. Can you give us an overview of what that project entails and why it matters for Johnson County landowners?
Well, this is one of those incredible opportunities where you have private landowners, the state of Wyoming as the owner of state land, and then the Bureau of Land Management, all working together to treat about 80,000 acres of this fire scar with a chemical that specifically targets cheatgrass. So it allows the native grasses and shrubs to come back, but it's going to allow us to get that. And we've got a really, really critical window right now because we've got to get that application down before we get the first frost, because at that point it's not going to be able to bind to the soil and the seeds in the cheatgrass. So our conservation district did an incredible job to get all those partners at the table, working with the Johnson County Weed and Pest, our local airport. I know people are hearing those planes going in and out. There's also a couple of choppers that are going to be working the southern end of the fire down by KC. So really just an incredible effort by Zach Byram and Amanda Furnival at the Conservation District to pull this all off. And so they're out there treating. But the problem is that when those planes are making those passes, you have those surface ownership changes. And so what we wanted to make sure that as they were going along, that if they were treating an area private and then they could come to a piece of state land, they could treat that too. And then, oh, you just ran into section of the BLM. So we needed to treat that too, because you don't want to leave areas where there are pockets of cheatgrass because it's just going to spread out from there. And unfortunately, we ran into an issue with our partners over at the BLM, and they denied what's called good neighbor authority to the conservation district. And so we've been working really hard to get that set up. And actually, Johnson County will hold the good neighbor authority with the BLM and then subcontract that to our conservation district so they can actually treat those. And the BLM said, we want to treat the cheatgrass while you guys are treating that other stuff. It saves on mobilization, it saves on cost, and it makes sure that there's a plan in place so we don't miss any acreage.
Sir,
lo and behold, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Floyd. That was a lot of talking.
Oh, so. No. It's absolutely necessary. It's great that you've got that information for us. I just had a question in regards to the federal government shutdown. What will that do?
Well, we don't know. And so when I get off the radio with you at 10 o'clock, I'm going to have a call with Todd Yeager, our local BLM field manager. And they are in the office, even though I don't believe they're getting paid, because they know how important it is and how we only have a very, very small window to get this cheatgrass treated. So I'm hopeful that we've found a way that we can sign the paperwork, because that was one thing. We were waiting on the good neighbor authority paperwork. They didn't get it done before the government shut down. And we're really not sure how they're going to pay their portion of the cost. But hopefully he's going to have good things for me to say, because what we can't do is route around those BLM sections, especially in some of these areas. Floyd, it's a 40-acre BLM parcel that's in the middle of state or private land. And so you could create these little hotbeds of noxious weeds if we aren't able to treat them. And so it's really, this has been a good effort in cooperation. Unfortunately, it's getting chewed up by a bureaucracy and also inaction by Congress to pass the budget and pass the appropriations bill.
Looking ahead, what kind of impact do you hope to see from this project over the next few years?
You know, I hope that when we are considered recovered from this, that the ground out there is in better shape for livestock and wildlife than it was before the fire. Obviously, we lost a ton of sagebrush. That's very important to sage grouse, but that takes years and years to grow back. So generationally, you and I may never get to see the work that they did to try to get the sage grouse to come back. But what we will hopefully be able to see is that we have stopped invasion of cheatgrass, venton, and these other things, which really also then change fire behavior because it burns so quickly. And so if we can get those native grasses back, if you do get another fire out there, it's better. Plus those native grasses, again, as I said, are so important for our ag industry and for our wildlife.
Sir, during the entire incident itself, I imagine you probably went out there and looked around, if not during the fire, then after it. What did it look like to you out there?
You know, I was fortunate that literally as they were mopping up on the southern half of the fire, that one of the members of the fire district number one took me out, and we drove through the entire burn scar, and it was still smoldering at that point. And it looked like the surface of the moon, black in every direction you could see. And there would be little pockets of areas that maybe the fire got pushed around. And so there was some hope in some sporadic spots out there of areas that didn't get burned because the fire was just moving so quickly. But it was pretty depressing. You know, then we got a little moisture and got a little bit of green. And so it's been a nice progression. And we're just over a year now since that fire happened. And the grass is coming back, and the wildlife is coming back. And you've got ranchers right now who are using a grazing deferral program through the NRCS so that the livestock isn't out there, so we can give that land an opportunity to come back. But it's really, it's going to be a long healing process. You just don't fix that fire overnight.
Yeah, and as with the treatments on top of it, trying to stay ahead of this game. For landowners who may be listening, sir, what role can they play in supporting or benefiting from these projects? Like you said before, you know, there's bureaucracy at certain levels Some landowners might be out there saying, you know what, I'd rather not, just because of things like that. What would you tell them?
I would tell them to continue to be involved with, whether it's working with the University of Wyoming folks out of Sheridan on the grasses, work with our local conservation district, continue to work with our local weed and pest board, because just because something didn't come up this year, it doesn't mean that that weed may not be up next year. So it's one of those where we just have to continue to be vigilant for the next couple of years until we get this treated and under control. And the other thing that I would say is, don't be afraid if you were impacted by that fire to continue to talk to friends and neighbors, utilize our mental health services. You know, when you're watching your livelihood burn up, there may be lasting psychological impacts from that. And it's okay to ask for help beyond getting that land back together. You also need to make sure that your mental health is being taken care of as you recover as a person.
Well, thank you for that, sir. That's something I didn't expect, but I really honestly appreciate that, because a lot of people out there watch their whole life go up in smoke, and that is an event that will stick with them forever. So thank you for that. Switching gears on you, Crazy Woman Canyon Road, as you said, has reopened. What is the scope of the work that was done out there, sir?
So this was a wonderful, again, partnership between Johnson County and the Forest Service. We had a bridge. They had a bridge. It was much smarter to put those two bridges together as one project, try to get one contractor in there, saves on mobilization costs, makes the project go more quickly. So it's a savings to the taxpayers, as well as got that done more quickly so that people could enjoy it. So there's two new bridges in there. Some of those bridges, what we think were installed by the Civilian Conservation Corp in the 30s. We have no idea what their footing or anything were like, and it was just time to get those replaced. So that's been done. There's been some additional work leading up to those to make it a safer area. So just a wonderful opportunity to keep that area open and accessible. Again, we've got that seasonal closure that'll hit when the snow does start to fly. So please get in there and enjoy those colors before they're gone and before that road closes for the winter.
Yeah, it was one of the first places I took my wife back in the day before, well, when we were first dating. I think that was a real selling point for having her kind of move in with me, so I always appreciated that area. Now, Road and Bridge actually just recently completed two major projects as well, Hazleton's seasonal parking lot and the Lake DeSmit North Access. I know that Lake DeSmit North Access is something that you've been working on for quite a while. Why were those particular projects priorities for you up there at the county?
Well, with that seasonal parking lot, that was the special use permit that we have with the Forest Service. It had to be renewed every 10 years. They wouldn't let us put a hard surface down. We worked really hard with them. It took 3 years to get the new agreement done. It covers 30 years. Scott and his crew did an incredible job. The area is covered in rotomill. It is well-defined. And so when Hazleton Road shuts down to truck traffic for the year, because, again, that's a seasonal road that we don't plow in the winter, people that want to recreate can park there, take their snow machines, and take off from there. If you're a cabin owner, you can park there and head into your cabin, whether you go by snow coach, snow machine, or cross-country skis. It just really is an incredible addition. And when people are going to see it, they're going to say, wow, that is just incredibly great work by them. Same that we had the Road and Bridge crew out making that area at the north end of Lake DeSmit, filling in the lighter ditch. People won't recognize how much land is now available out there for when we put in our boat ramp and the parking area and the comfort stations. Just how that shaped that piece of property. So it's going to be really good. They've done a couple of things to enhance it so it's easier for the public to get down to that little north fishing pond that is between the lighter ditch and the lake, as well as access the lake on it. So just some, again, incredible things That was a wonderful partnership with the Game and Fish that they gave us some money to help pay for that. So it was paid for with the interest off of our Lake Nisimet Trust account. So not really an expense to the taxpayer to make that recreation area. But it is beautiful, and we got a little road work to do, and then they will throw that gate open and people can use it. And certainly we want to make sure that the ice fishermen know about that, because that'll be the next season out there.
And sir, I'm running out of time with you. I got about a minute and a half left. Is there anything that you really wanted to address to the Johnson County people or everyone in the area?
No, we finished up a Board of Equalization hearing this morning, Floyd, and that's one of those wonderful opportunities where if you have a question about your taxes, you can work through the process with the assessor. So that is always important and just a good exercise in our wonderful democracy. And certainly, hopefully with this government shutdown, we don't see a disruption in our services. Certainly the county is going to be looking at how we interact with the federal government, because we just don't know how long this is going to go on.
Absolutely. And just to kind of piggyback off of what you were saying, sir, with a lot of those property tax refunds and programs that are going on, things have changed, folks. I had a conversation with Sheridan County Assessor Paul Fall. If you are in Johnson County, a lot of these rules and programs still apply to you. So please jump on to SheridanMedia.com, find those programs, because there are very important deadlines that you should know about. Matter of fact, if I remember correctly, some are starting today. Mr. Novotny, it is always a pleasure speaking with you, Chairman. I'm glad we could catch up, and thanks for calling in.
Always, Floyd. Good to talk with you.
All right, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to the Hub on Smith.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit efirstfederal.bank, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Lisa Hansen with MC2 Realty, inviting you to take a look at this beautifully maintained 4-bedroom, 2-bath home featuring AC, a newer roof, and hot water heater. The inviting kitchen offers an island abundant storage and a walk-in pantry. A convenient main-level laundry allows for easy single-level living. Ideally situated at 1430 Omar near Mavrakis Pond and the walking path. List price is just $385. To take a look at this property, contact me, Lisa Hansen, at 307-763-3964.
Local news on the radio keeps you in the know right where you live.
Memorandum of Understanding between Sheridan County and the City of Sheridan outlines the responsibilities of the two jurisdictions.
It's your neighborhood, your community, and your news.
2025 Johnson County Fair and Rodeo in Buffalo will kick off today and will run through Sunday.
From Sheridan and Johnson County to statewide education updates.
The department says statewide performance in all three tested content areas increased by 1-3% over the last school year.
And scam warnings straight from local law enforcement.
Sheriff Dominguez has made scam awareness a priority during his appearances on Sheridan Media's Public Pulse.
Sheridan Media brings local news straight to you, fast, familiar, and right on time. Because what happens here matters.